additional, almost double that number of people were wounded. So that makes per incident, the average death rate is about 3. The average wound rate is just about 5.5, almost 6 people. The big thing to take away here, though, is over time, that death rate has increased. People have become better at actually killing victims. It's not going down. People are getting more deadly. So where are these happening at? The big blue circle, that represents businesses. 44% of all the active shooters since 2000 have happened in businesses, which is horrible, right? It's usually disgruntled employees or employees that have an issue with a spouse or a lover or something like that, some kind of interpersonal relationship issue, or they've been terminated. Second to that, and very devastating, is schools. Schools is 21% of all active shooters happens in schools. Those are the two biggest ones that we're seeing. When we look back in history, right, most of us in this room can remember Columbine, right? And that's kind of where things kicked off when it comes to active shooter, was in the Columbine. But then as we go over time, we look at, in law enforcement anyway, we look at 6 key events that happened, because those 6 key events, which we're going to discuss briefly here in just a second, have transformed how we react and how we are talking to people how to react to active shooter events. So if we look at Columbine High School, we have 2 subjects. They killed 13 students and they wounded 24. If you think back to law enforcement tactics at that time, do you guys remember what they were doing? It was you isolated the scene and you waited for SWAT to show up, and then SWAT would deal with the problem. Columbine taught us we can't do that. We do not have the time in the event of an active shooter to wait. Police officers now are going to come to and go to that threat. And we'll discuss police law enforcement action here later on in the slide. Virginia Tech, the thing we learned about this one, there were several actually key things we take away from this one. One, bad guys are getting smarter. They actually barricaded doors in this event. The subject chain linked some doors together so law enforcement couldn't get in. That bought him some additional time. It was actually also the first time I was speaking with a Mayo doctor, and it was actually the first time tourniquets were involved in a mass casualty incident and actually was saving lives. So we're going to talk about medical stuff here later on as well. And you can see there at Virginia Tech, by buying him time, 32 people were killed and 17 were wounded. Much more effective. Fort Hood, Texas. We saw here bad guys going mobile. So at Columbine and at Virginia Tech, they stayed kind of localized. In Fort Hood, he went into one building, started shooting, then actually went outside and was doing some more shooting. That's when he was engaged later on. Sandy Hook. The big takeaway here is that people with no training can save lives. We had teachers that were covering students with their bodies and protecting them. Pulse Nightclub. Pulse Nightclub was a huge fatality rate with 49 killed. And the thing we learned there was, in mass casualty events, a couple of police officers may be able to stop that threat, but they cannot treat all of the people who are wounded. And so you see a lot of people dying from extremity wounds, from massive blood loss, that could be treated if other people understood how to stop or at least slow down that blood loss. And then the Las Vegas shooting, the most recent one, at least in this study, I should say, you had 58 killed, 496 wounded. The gentleman that was doing that was from an elevated position, as you all know. He was shooting with some high-powered rifles with some pretty high cyclic rates. And some of those wounded, it won't ever be determined, I don't think, may have happened by people actually leaving the area. But what we learned about this one was that no matter what else people need to understand is situational awareness. Know what's going on around them. Accept the fact that even though it's unlikely, there is evil in this world, and we need to be mentally prepared to deal with that evil. So here's the Pulse nightclub video. I'm going to show it here in just a second. A couple takeaways, and the audio sounded pretty good, so this should come in. You guys should be able to hear a couple things. I'm going to play it, and then we're going to break down a couple things. And we're going to see how we actually are our own worst enemies.
You said Pulse.
This is Las Vegas. Sorry, the music festival of Las Vegas, not Pulse nightclub. I apologize. So, we heard a few things, right? Everyone heard that gunfire, right? That rapid, cyclic rate of gunfire. And then what did you see? What was the people's reaction? They ducked, right? They got down. They didn't know where it was coming from. Now, their bodies are working against them a little bit, right? Science and nature are working against us a little bit in this instance. Because with high stress, what you're going to see happen is you're going to start to get some tunnel vision, or may get tunnel vision. You may get audio occlusion. You might not hear as well. But what you also hear is someone actually says, "We can't leave yet." Why can't you leave yet? Somebody is actually trying to kill you. Why can't you leave yet? Human beings, we hate to think that another human being wants to do us harm, right? So, for example, what sounds worse? A tornado comes, hits your house, kills everyone in your house but you, destroys your house. Or someone comes in to rob you, kills everyone in your house except you, then burns your house down. Which is worse? The second one's worse, right? Even though the net result is the exact same. Your loved ones are dead, your house is gone. The one with the person is personal to us because we can't imagine someone doing that to us. So in this case, we like to rationalize what is obvious to everyone else. And we're the only creatures on the face of the earth that does that. Every other creature, if they hear a gunshot, who's my hunters in here? All right, deer hunters, turkey hunters, you shoot at a deer, if you miss, does that turkey go, or that deer say, "Well, I don't think he was shooting at me." Right? Oh, they're gone. But we as human beings, we don't want to accept that someone else would do that. And there's not many out there that will. The statistics show violent encounters, even though they're going up, generally speaking, 4 out of every 1,000 people is going to experience a violent attack of some sort. That's not many. But it's still possible. So, who here has heard of Colonel Boyd and the Oodaloo? We got any military folks in here, law enforcement folks? All right, so Colonel Boyd was a fancy pilot, really good pilot back in the Korean days and the Vietnam days, and he revolutionized things. I was not in the Air Force, but he revolutionized the way fighter jets are built and the way pilots are trained. And he developed this thing called the Oodaloo, which is observe, orient, decide, act, right? We're in the military, we're in the government, we love acronyms, even though they make absolutely no sense. But we gotta put an acronym to it so someone can get money for it. So, the Oodaloo. Observe. The first thing is what we physically take in with our eyes. Now this can work for us individually, and it can work for us collectively as well. So if it's just me, and I'm looking out at these roughly 55 people in this room, right? I have to look everywhere. Right? To see all of you, I have to look everywhere. I have to walk left, I have to walk right to see what you're doing. Now, in the law enforcement world, or if you just want to be, safe, what do I need to look at that can hurt me when I'm looking out at these folks? What do I care about? Say it.
Hands.
I care about your hands. Right? I also care about your eyes, because our eyes, even those poker players, right, they're cheating now, they're putting sunglasses on and listening to music, right? The eyes are the windows of the soul. You can't hide hate in your eyes, as you put sunglasses. But sunglasses in here wouldn't make much sense if you're probably having a discussion, right? So, hands, eyes, And this is where people like to hide their guns, right? So if I see hate in your eyes, I see your hands go into your hips, and yes, and I can see on your face that there's something wrong with you, we're probably going to have a discussion, right? So hands. So from the observation, I can take everything and narrow it down to little pieces. So now I'm more focused on what's going on. Orientation, where I'm physically at in the room. John is also in the FBI, he's right over here. And if John and I were working together, John could easily take, because I'm on this side, he's on that side, John could easily take that half of the room, I could take this half of the room. Now, my focus has been narrowed down to what? Half. John's got half, we're working together. So now, we're observing less, so I can be more focused on those minor details, and John can be more focused on those minor details. Orientation. How we actually physically present ourselves to a threat. If there is a threat, I first have to observe it, then I have to orient myself towards that threat to deal with it. Then I gotta make a decision. What am I gonna do? And that's when we're gonna get into run, hide, fight, which is what we're preaching when it comes to active shooter. Our decisions are really run, hide, and fight. And we'll break those down here shortly. And then act. Regardless of what you choose, can't get lost in overanalyzation. You have to make a decision, and you have to act on it aggressively and decisively. If you're going to fight, you fight like your life depends on it, because it might. If you're going to run, know where you're running, and run like your life depends on it. And then repeat. Just because you made a decision, the situation may change. You need to reassess what's going on, cycle back through that loop, and then continue to make your way to where safety is. So now on the right, the triangle of control. This was explained to me a long time ago. I think it's great. I don't like to think of run, hide, fight as in first I'm going to run, then I'm going to hide, and then I'm going to fight. I look at it as a decision tree. And so of all those three things, me, the environment, and the enemy, what can I control? Those three things.
Me.
Right? I can't tell you if it's going to rain. I can't tell you what the bad guy's going to bring for a fight. I don't know if he's going to bring a knife, he's going to bring a bat, he's going to bring a gun. I don't have any control over that. I definitely don't have any control of the environment. So, a long time ago, training exercise, we were up in the mountains, and we were flying in on Blackhawks, and we got out, and I'm a guy from Iowa, first time really in the mountains. Didn't realize that even in July, in the Rockies, at above 10,000 feet, the snow was about waist deep. Forgot to bring snowshoes. So, jumped into the snow, and have you ever tried to get yourself out of a snowdrift? It's kind of like digging yourself out of a hole, right? Like, it's really, really hard. After I don't know how long, I was finally able to get myself out of this drift, and I realized I failed to take the environment into consideration. And by not taking that into consideration, I greatly decrease my ability, right? So now to put that in an active shooter example, if you are on the third floor of a building and the shooter is coming down your hallway and you decide to break the window and jump out the window, you fail to take into account the environmental situation and you're on the third floor, what happens when you hit the ground? Do you understand how if we don't think about the enemy and we don't think about the environment, can hurt our decision, but if we take those into consideration, it can very much help our decision. Mindset. This is probably the single most important thing that we can do prior to the event, is have that aggressive mindset. Be situationally aware and know what's going to happen before it unfortunately does happen, or at least see that something might be happening. So, the way this works is, generally speaking, there's three colors. There's an additional two, which we can get into afterwards. It's not that important in this environment, but white. So condition white is, who here has kids? All right, who here has been in their house, has walked around a corner, and has had the kids scare the living hell out of them because you didn't realize they were there? That is condition white. You're not expecting the kid to come running into the bathroom at the time that you're jumping in the shower, right? Like, you just don't expect that, even though you should after three times. You don't expect it, and it scares you, or you come around the corner and they're right there, and they want a cookie or whatever, like, Jesus, where'd you come from? That is conditioned white. Who here goes running with iPhone or earbuds in, outside? We don't have any situational awareness from our ears. And there is science that suggests that we actually can react faster to sound than we can to sight, but we're taking away our half of our ability to process information by running with earbuds. And who saw in Iowa this last year, you had one girl who was killed when she was running, right? On the gravel road or on one of the roads in a small town, had earphones in, was abducted, and was unfortunately killed. That is conditioned white. Conditioned yellow is a better term for that is vigilant. We're aware of what's going on. We're not hypervigilant, right? Like, we're not going crazy, we're not paranoid, although I will tell you, just because no one's following you doesn't mean that they might not be in the future. So that doesn't mean you're necessarily paranoid. My wife thinks I am paranoid. I disagree. It's a continual fight. But conditioned yellow is sustainable. It's that we're aware of our surroundings. We know what's going on, and we see what people are doing. We're reading people's body language, right? We know, oh, they're tired, they're falling asleep, I'm bored, whatever it is, right? We're in tune with our environment. Condition red, that's where our heart rate is really starting to get elevated, our systolic blood pressure is even more elevated, and we actually start to lose fine motor skills. We may start to get that tunnel vision. We may start to get audio occlusion. There's other things that come wrong. We'll talk about a little bit more detail. But that's that condition red. So it's January in North Dakota, and you're driving home at 10 o'clock at night in the middle of a snowstorm. Who's been there? All right, what happens? You are getting water out of your steering wheel, right? You are squeezing the holy hell out of that steering wheel until you get to your house. And then all of a sudden you get home, and then what happens? And your neck's sore, right? Your forearms are tired. That's condition red. Could you imagine walking around in life all day in that? You wear yourself out. You can't do it. It's not sustainable. So we need to hover in that yellow to red phase. To put yellow into context, bike riders, motorcycle enthusiasts, stuff like that, mountain bikers, anyone in here? All right, so motorcyclists, bicyclists, when you're riding your bike and you're going down the road and you see that car at the intersection and you look in there, I don't know how it works, but you can actually see their face and you know they didn't see you, right? And you're like, they're gonna pull out in front of me. And so what do? You ease back on the throttle or you hover on the brakes or whatever, you stop pedaling. And then sure enough, it comes true, they pull out, but you're ready for it. That's the best way I can kind of explain condition yellow. You're just aware of what's going on. You have to believe, regardless of any of these, you have to believe that you will survive. You have to believe that in your heart. So what I'd like to do, go ahead, shut your eyes. Think about what in your life is worth you coming home. Hold on to that thought. All right, go ahead and open your eyes. Close. You can get classes on defensive tactics. You can get classes on how to shoot. What you can't get classes on is your will to act and your will to survive. So the best advice I can give you is, what are you willing to do to go to whatever it is most important to you? Me is going home, right? Nothing's stopping me from going home at night. I don't care what it is. That's what I hold on to. And that's what drives my will to act. Resist that rationalization. Again, 4 out of 1,000. But it is out there. So here's another video where we resist rationalization. I don't know how many of you guys saw it, but there was a gunshot, right, like in the rocks, and then
gone.
How many people even saw those sheep? Like, there's like three you can see. I don't know where some of them multiply. They're like gremlins, right? Like someone had water. And they spontaneously arrived. That's what we're looking for. No rationalization. Yep, someone shoot, not out. So pre-attack indicators. I need a volunteer in the room. It can't be John, because you guys don't think I rolled up. You guys don't think that it's fixed. I do need a volunteer. It's not a trick. Go ahead, sir. Come on up. So, go ahead and stand right here for me. We're going to do a simple demonstration of action versus reaction. And the way we're going to do this, and then I'm going to explain kind of what it's showing, is here's a pen, all right? For those who can't see, it's a pen. I'm going to ask you, sir, what's your name?
Mike.
Mike, I'm Ryan. Hold your hand above here. Is this thumb going to hurt you at all? Okay. So, Mike's only job in life is to get to that pen before I do. Okay? I'm going to hold my hand. If you guys can't see, go ahead and stand up. I'm going to hold my hand above his. Okay? But now, you cannot move your hand until my hand moves. Does that make sense? Either one. You just have to beat me to that pen. You can't move until I move. You understand? This could fail, right? Who knows? This is one thing that you got to realize. Like, this could fail, but we're going to show action versus reaction. You ready, Mike?
Yeah. All
right. So, I won that one. All right, go ahead, put it up there again. Now,
that's good.
Now, I'm going to increase the distance. Who's got the advantage?
Mike's
got a distance advantage, right?
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, by a lot. Okay, you ready, Mike? You're going to win this. So, my action is going to be his reaction every time. Every time. This is a knife, right? So now, Mike's got to react to me, and I've got a knife. That's not where we want to be. So now let's apply a little bit to it. And let's, all right, so now Mike, you ready? I'm going to give you a pre-attack indicator, which we're about to discuss. When I blink twice, I'm going for that pen. All right? I'm not going for it until I blink twice. You with me?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead, put your hand above it. All right, I'm still going to, I'm going to come closer now to his hand. I'm still above it. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, so Mike knew where to look.
Thank you. Go ahead, sit down.
Mike knew where to look, what to look for, and he was able to beat me to that pin. The same thing would hold true at a certain distance, right? Like if I was up on my tippy toes, Mike's probably going to beat me because he's got distance. So distance also is our friend. If it's you and I, right, and we're right here, this is really personal, and this is going to happen really quick. Versus that one, that person way back in the, you know, back there. I've got time there. I don't have much time here. Same process, right?
Thanks, Mike. One time we'll find someone that's just got like stupid reflexes, and they're like, "Yeah, no, I got it."
Yeah, yeah. So, phases of an attack. So when you hear about these active shooter events, everyone's like, "Oh, it just happened spur of the moment, right? No one saw it coming." That's what you initially hear. Complete myth. Almost every single one of them took days, weeks, and with that time and with these phases, this is generally speaking how they break down, which we'll discuss. That gives us an opportunity, right? If we know what we're looking for and we're situationally aware, we're in that condition yellow. It gives us an opportunity to see these behavioral characteristics that may indicate a potential problem. And then we have time to tell somebody something, tell law enforcement, right? And when we tell law enforcement, we're kind of looking for those five W's. Like, who it is, what they're doing, where it happened, when it happened, and why you think it.
it's an issue.
So, the grievance, ideology, and fantasy. Who here has not had a grievance? I can't raise my hand. Alright? We all have grievances. But, generally speaking, people are not consumed by that grievance. They're not consumed by that ideology or that fantasy. Right? It's their whole life. It's that person who just can't let go and find, you know, something to counter it. That's what we're concerned with when we talk about grievance, ideology, and fantasy. Kids, you know, everyone talks about kids in video games, right? And there's no doubt in my mind, we'll get into the conversation, there's no doubt in my mind that violent media and kids being more violent are linked somehow, right? But most kids are not consumed by that. That's why you don't see all these kids who play video games and turn into people. But when they are consumed with this, so if you look at Columbine, right? When you are consumed and that's your only outlet, is these other aggravating factors, it's a huge issue.
Planning.
So during this grievance, during this ideology, and during this planning, you see people's change, right? This guy who was kind of, you know, a normal dude for all intents and purposes, or women, like women are losing their mind now and attacking people too, right? So not to discriminate here, women are being bad too. But we see, hey, you know what? Well, last month, Joe was fine. Now he started talking about going through a divorce, having some money issues, and he is just completely different. Completely different person. Who here thinks that these people tell someone that they want to hurt somebody prior to an attack? Yeah, happens a lot more than we think it does, right? A lot more. I think more than half of the people that have conducted attacks in businesses have told someone that they were upset and they wanted to hurt somebody. It's an amazing number. I think whether they do it on social media or they actually do it person to person, most of them are actually person to person. Alright. Planning. So you have that person who's outside your office, who has no reason to be outside your office, but they're there every day and they're kind of watching patterns of when people are coming and going. We had a call in the other day, an armored car driver said, hey, there's a vehicle, he was videoing us at a couple different locations. Maybe they're planning an attack on that armored car, I don't know yet, right? We're gonna do that. But that gives us an opportunity, if we're looking for it, if we're not walking out of the office with our earbuds in and our cell phone, right? Gives us an opportunity to see those things and then report it. Preparation. This is where we shift from planning and thoughts to action, right? We're buying knives, we're buying guns, whatever it is, we're starting to stockpile the stuff we need to be successful. Then you have the approach. On the preparation phase, there's been people who have been in that preparation phase for at least a week. Like that can last a long time. The approach, as someone's coming into your building, right? If it's August and they're coming in with a winter coat on, that's odd, right? That, boom, I just went from listening to music to, why does he have a coat on, right? And then the actual implementation, the event itself. So this happened in Minnesota. It was actually a pretty remarkable story. This kid had a storage unit. This was before I came to Minnesota, but this kid had a storage unit, and he was stockpiling weapons in there. He was in that preparation phase. And a gal who worked there noticed this guy, and he was having problems with the lock on the storage unit, on the door that raises up, the garage door. Couldn't get it, and then when he finally got it, he went in and then shut it behind him. She's like, that's weird. And so when we get into autonomic nervous system, right? We talk about sympathetic nervous systems and that loss of fine motor skills, right? This guy was pretty stressed out because he had a whole bunch of guns in there that he knew he was going to do something evil with. And bad guys are human just like us. And they are also subject to the laws of physics and the laws of science, and so he's having problems with those keys. She called it in, police, conducted an investigation, and they stopped an attack before it happened. All because she saw something and she said something. And so
when you're at your businesses, or you're at your schools, or you're at your churches, and you see something, or you're just out at a restaurant, right? You never know, that one piece of information that you thought was weird might be the missing puzzle piece to a law enforcement already looking at. To you, it may be insignificant, but law enforcement is already onto something, and you just filled in that blank spot. So, the courses of action. Run, hide, fight. I'm going to show this video. I'm going to show this video. It's about 5 minutes long. And it's going to kind of walk you through run, hide, fight. And we're going to break down the considerations for each of those.
It may feel like just another day at the office. But occasionally, life feels more like an action movie than reality. The authorities are working hard to protect you and to protect our public spaces. But sometimes, bad people do bad things. Their motivations are different. The warning signs may vary, but the devastating effects are the same. And unfortunately, you need to be prepared for the worst. If you ever find yourself in the middle of an active shooter event, your survival may depend on whether or not you have a plan. The plan doesn't have to be complicated. There are three things you could do that make a difference. Run, hide, fight. First and foremost, if you can get out, do. Always try and escape or evacuate, even when others insist on staying. Encourage others to leave with you, but don't let them slow you down with indecision. Remember what's important, you, not your stuff. Leave your belongings behind and try to find a way to get out safely. Trying to get yourself out of harm's way needs to be your number one priority. Once you are out of the line of fire, try to prevent others from walking into the danger zone and call 911. If you can't get out safely, you need to find a place to hide. Act quickly and quietly. Try to secure your hiding place the best you can. Turn out lights, and if possible, remember to lock doors. Silence your ringer and vibration mode on your cell phone. And if you can't find a safe room or closet, try to conceal yourself behind large objects that may protect you. Do your best to remain quiet and calm. As a last resort, if your life is at risk, whether you are alone or working together as a group, fight. Act with aggression. Improvise weapons. Disarm him. And commit to taking the shooter down. no matter what. Try to be aware of your environment. Always have an exit plan. Know that in an incident like this, victims are generally chosen randomly. The event is unpredictable and may evolve quickly. The first responders on the scene are not there to evacuate or tend to the injured. They are well trained and are there to stop the shooter. Your actions can make a difference for your safety and survival. Be aware and be prepared. And if you find yourself facing an active shooter, there are three key things you need to remember to survive. Run, hide, fight.
Alright, so considerations when running, right? What are your physical capabilities? Are you injured? Where are you running to? The biggest mistake I see when we train people on this stuff, or just in law enforcement in general, and military as well, is people are really quick to run, but they realize when they get about 20 feet that they have no idea where they're running to. So before you run, that tactical pause, where am I going? Right? Okay, I'm going to that door. And then aggressively and decisively get to that point, wherever it is that you're going. Know where you're going. Knowing where the enemy is, so remember that triangle of control, right? Like, okay, where's the bad guy at? The bad guy's to the right, and there's nothing to the left. But I've got a window back here on the first floor. Cool, I'm breaking that window, so I'm going up. Hiding is a temporary solution, right? It may work very well. There's a great video, you guys can Google it, on the Virginia Tech. There was a gal in a very much a similar auditorium like this, much bigger though, through that Virginia Tech. But she was hiding, she got shot 3 times, and she was telling her story. Because her will to survive got her through it. So if you're going to hide, be prepared to fight. So, what's the most dangerous animal? Right? A cornered one. So, we're hiding, we're in that room, don't wait and be like, okay, now we're in here, now I gotta decide if I know I'm hiding, I'm ready to fight. Because that mindset is gonna help you get through that situation. Simply locking doors is huge, right? I mean, generally speaking, in this building, you know, it's going to be plywood and cinder block, and this is drywall, right? This stuff here isn't going to stop bullets. Around the doors is a little bit better. These are metal doors, and then they, you know, these are probably metal frame studs, would be my guess. But in houses, it's obviously mostly wood. But there is some cover here, cover being stuff that stops bullets versus concealment, stuff that hides you from being seen. If you can get cover, stuff that stops bullets, that's the best. Generally speaking, bad guys aren't trying to break down doors unless they're after a specific person, and that person is behind that door. Try and find some improvised weapons. Anything can be a weapon, right? In the hands of someone who wants to live, anything can be a weapon. There's a great video. I don't know how old she is, but she's probably 7 years old. It's in, I think, Scotland. Someone went to mug her. And she beat her with her purse. And they took off without her purse. It was a huge win for her. And she said, just because she resisted, they're like, okay, never mind, I'm out. A 7-year-old woman, I mean, it would have been very easy for that person to overpower her and take what they wanted, but they didn't. So fighting. I give a couple techniques on fighting just to give you the advantage. But the biggest thing I can say about fighting, and any of these really, right, is you may be choosing between a bad decision and a worse decision. There's no guarantee that in any of this you're not going to get hurt or maybe even killed. It's a possibility because violence has come to you. So when you do something, you have to do it aggressively. That being said, there are certain things that can do to give us an advantage, right? So, ma'am, can I use you as an example this time? Can you stand up for me right here? All right, sir, can you come up here too? All right, so you are going to be the bad guy in this one. Like I said, equal opportunities. All right, so what's your name, sir?
Jason.
Jason, and ma'am, Tara. All right, so if Tara's the bad guy, bad girl, right? And him and he and I are going to fight her. Right? If we're this close, if we're coming at you like this, what decision do you have to make right now? Or what else?
I'm at you.
Yep, right. There's not a whole lot of decision making here, right? Because we're kind of one person even though we're close together. If you have a gun, there's really not a whole lot of aiming here because we're just a mass of people, right? Like, this is just a mass of dude right here. So, however, if we can get an angle on her, and if you just think of an L, so Jason would have you stand there, and I'm going to stand here. She's the bad guy. Now, what decision do you have to make? Right. So, if I go after her from this way and he goes after her from this way, we've got that right angle, right? I may be sucking up bullets. I may be taking some knives, but who is it? Right? Sucks for me if she picks me, right? It's my day. But I'm giving him, and I'm giving everyone else that opportunity. But I have to commit to it. God, or excuse me, Jason has to commit to it. Does that make sense? The other thing to think about is the room composition and the layout. So in this room here, right, most office buildings, it's offices, 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 right? And there's that ability to barricade yourself in your office. But if you're in a big room here, if you're out of school, you're in the gymnasium, or if you're in lunch, or whatever, right? There actually is probably all three of these are happening at the same time. So if John's our bad guy, and John comes in this door, is he going to be able to run? He may have to fight, right? You may have to fight, because you are there. You guys have time. You have distance. You may be able. Does that make sense? So even in a room, not everyone is confined to one tactic. The good guys are on their way. But they don't care about you until the threat is gone. So we're getting to medical, we're going to talk about it, but the thing that's going to kill you fastest is the threat. Losing a lot of blood is second to that, but it's really close second. Right? So the cops are going towards the threat. You may be hurt, you may be hurt bad. They're going by you, so do not expect them to stop and help you, because they're not going to. We have to help ourselves. All right? So, cops get a call. There's a shooter, two shooters, right? Most of these, there's one shooter involved. But initial reports are almost always wrong. It's always multiple shooters that they're litigating for you at such and such location. Imagine where that cop, where his blood pressure just went, right? He is going to be stressed. She is going to be stressed. So when they get there, we've got two jobs to do, right? One is, show them we're not a threat. Let them see your hands. As best as you can, take a deep breath, calm yourself down, and give them the best information you have on where that shooter is at, or whoever it is at. For the military folks in here, the salute report, and again, another acronym, right? Those right there. So, how many there are?
Are they shooting? Are they stabbing? What, you know, what's their activity? Where did you last see them? That's the L. What are they wearing? Right, that's the U. When did you see them last, if you can remember that? And what kind of guns did they have? Did they have a pistol? Did they have a rifle? Did they have a shotgun? What did they have? The reason why that's important is because if absent gun shooting or screaming, cops are going to have to go in every single room to find the bad guy. If we're able to direct them to where the bad guy is, they can get there faster, and they can stop that threat faster, and then they can start to help people and start to stop leading and get into the bad guys. So our two jobs, when the law enforcement show up, show them we're not a threat, and then tell them what the threat looks like and where they're at. So the medical piece. The first thing I want to talk about is that you're not alone. And what I mean by that is everyone has different reactions to stress, right? Everyone sees it in their spouses, right? My spouse reacts this way to stress, I react this way to stress, kids, same thing. There is a litany of ways that people are going to respond to these types of stresses. You need to understand that your response, regardless of what it is perfectly normal. That will help you in the recovery phase when it comes to guilt that you may have, namely it's like survivor's guilt. So one of them, which is kind of funny, right, to lighten the mood a little bit, is, you know, some people lose bowel and bladder control in stressful environments. It doesn't mean you're a coward. It means that at the time that this happened, you probably had to go to the bathroom, and your body doesn't care about you having to go to the bathroom because it's rushing blood other places, and your nervous system's firing to other places that need it more importantly than your bladder and your bowels. Okay? So don't worry about it. If it happens, it happens. Let it go. Literally. All right. The next thing that can happen is immediately following the situation, people will have a reaction that says, I'm glad it wasn't me. And then immediately after saying that, they feel horrible. Because it was somebody else, right? That is normal. Who here, you don't have to raise your hands, but who here has had a kid? Just think, don't have to raise your hand if it's happened, you can't, anyone. But who here has had a kid who's been in a car accident? Was your first response, is the car okay? No. Is my kid okay? Right, that's all you care about initially. It's perfectly normal to worry about yourself first. That's why we don't hug grizzly bears, right? We've learned grizzly bears are dangerous. It's okay. Don't feel bad about that. So, why is this important? There's two reasons why this is important. One is, with just a little bit of knowledge on medical, you guys can save a life. Like, I'm not a doctor. I'm not even staying at a Holiday Inn. Right? But I can stop some bleeding like it's nobody's business. And if your life depends on it, I'm going to stop that bleeding with everything I got. I promise you. Okay? The other thing is, when you're coming up with your plans, or if you think about run, hide, fight, our body is going to react, right, with automatic nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system, which mobilizes our large muscle groups. It dilates our muscles in our heart to give us more blood, dilates our bronchioles and our lungs to give us more air, because we want to run and we want to fight. That's what our body wants to do. So we've developed this plan to help exploit those strengths of a lot of blood and a lot of air going to my major muscle groups. And we want to mitigate the weaknesses. Tunnel vision, audio occlusion, loss of fine motor skills. So,
In schools now, I see a lot, right? They're, you know, how do you lock your door? Depends on the kind of door you have, but does it take getting the key out and putting the key in a lock? Because that's a fine motor skill. We may lose that under stress. So in schools, what they're doing is they're putting strong magnets that keep the door open and not latching, but it's always locked. So now I just have to grab the magnet and pull it out. That's a gross motor skill. I'll probably have that even when my heart rate's at 145, 155. I'll be able to do that. So I'm utilizing my body's natural reaction to come up with a good plan. Does that make sense? Everyone, really quick, go ahead and, who here's heard of Carlos the Cowboy? All right, who here's heard of the Boston bombing? All right, on your own, Google on your phone, don't do it right now.
That's gonna give you time, but I only got a couple minutes.
Google Carlos the Cowboy. When you pull it, and you're gonna see a picture of a dude in a weird hat, right? And there's gonna be a guy that's really pale next to him. And Carlos is gonna have something in his hand. And zoom in on what he's got in his hand. It's a femoral artery. That cat got both his legs blown off. Carlos, who's an interesting story, by the way, side note on that. It's a tragic story, really tragic story, then interesting story. Carlos was running with the ambulance crew, and he had a hold of this guy's femoral artery to keep it from bleeding. And the guy lived. Because he stopped the blood, literally by pinching the femoral artery. So, our goal in medical care, this is after we're away from the threat, whether we're outside or the threat's down, it doesn't matter, but there's no immediate threat. Our job is to buy the injured people as much time as we can to get to the hospital. What the golden hour is if we can get, we live in the greatest country in the world, right? We do. Especially with medicine, we really live in the greatest country in the world. If we can get people to a hospital within an hour, their chance of survival is 80 to 90%. It's huge. But to do that, we need to focus on the things that are going to kill them the fastest. And the first one here is blood loss. Massive bleeding, which is what the F stands for. So, who here remembers the ABCs? ABCs is great if you're having heart attack. We're not worried about heart attacks right now, we're worried about trauma. And so, the anatomy 101. Any nurses, EMS, doctors in here? All right, so keep me honest. Anatomy 101, our bodies are designed to take punches, right? I got a thick skull, it protects the brain. It's a really small brain, but it protects it, right? I've got a heart, I've got lungs, protected by ribcage, sternum. All of my major arteries run deep and on the inside of my long bones. That's designed to protect those arteries. So, we're already designed to take some abuse. Now, once those pipes get hurt and the holes and the fluid starts leaking out, we gotta stop them. So how are we stopping? Anyone here not seen a tourniquet? I'll pass it around, you guys can take a look. But this is a tourniquet. There's some pretty good detail if you want to afterwards, we can talk about how you have it staged. But the idea of a tourniquet is put a whole bunch of pressure on those arteries, whether it's up, all the way up on your arm, not on the joint, but below the joint, or all the way up on the leg, and you crank it down, and you twist, and you twist, and you twist, until the bleeding stops. It's gonna buy them a ton of time. Anyone here had surgery? All right, so back in the 90s, they're like, oh no, we can't use tourniquets, tourniquets are the devil. Well, when you go and have surgery, what do? They stop bleeding to that appendage, whatever you're having surgery on, right? They put a tourniquet on it. It looks different than this, but it's still a tourniquet. You're gonna be fine, right? You're actually gonna be, if you've been shot and you know it, take a breath, but you're still alive, right? You're good, because the bleeding stopped. The other thing you can do is what's called a pressure dressing. This is in those areas, especially where you can't get a tourniquet on, so like in the groin and the armpits and things like that, not so much the chest, but you want to put a bunch of pressure on that spot. If you don't have one of these, a t-shirt rolled up, pushing really, really hard, that's going to help by that time. the A, airway. For us, the best thing you can do is back to the ABCs, head, tilt, chin, lift. Or the jaw thrust or whatever, but just get that airway open so that they can breathe. But bleeding is the most important thing because blood carries oxygen, right? So we can give them all the air in the world, but if all that air is coming out their arm, it's not getting where it needs to be. So we need to stop that bleeding. Shock. What shock is shock is caused by, in our case, with trauma, we're worried about hypovolemic shock. Shock because they don't have enough blood, which is carrying oxygen to the brain and to the vital organs. So there's nothing we can do to treat shock in that instance. The best thing is get them to a hospital where they're going to get more blood. That will fix shock. Hypothermia. Even in the summer in North Dakota, actually North Dakota's like, even in the summer in Arizona, you can get hypothermic with a lot of blood loss. You have to keep them warm. If you have a blanket, throw a blanket on them. If you can get them off the ground, get them off the ground. The worst thing for a trauma patient is if they're cold and they're in shock. Because if they're cold and they're in shock, the mortality rate is in the 90 percentile. You gotta keep them warm. Stop the bleeding, keep them warm, and get them to a hospital. The Hartford Consensus came out after the Sandy Hook deal, and what that really found was that people who have a purpose, even if that purpose is pinching a femoral artery, their recovery mentally and emotionally after the event was much greater than people who had no purpose. So find a purpose. If God forbid you ever find yourself in one of these events, find a purpose. If someone doesn't know what to do, give them a purpose. Help that person survive this event. I'll pass these around. This is just an example of a pressure dressing. This is an example of a tourniquet. Go ahead and take a look at it. Just make sure I get them back at some point in time before you leave. It's really all I have to say on medical, and that's going to wrap up my time. There's a couple other things I do want to show you quick, just so you guys have. So, there's a bunch of resources out there. All these videos, you can Google, right? They're on YouTube. I've tested this out. This is exactly how it works. If you're interested in how to plan one of these events, go to our FBI.gov website. You'll see a resources tab. You'll see a businesses tab. You can scroll down to the active shooter resources, and there's a ton of them. If you want someone to come out to your site and actually help you with security planning, this is a website, or this is an email that you can actually email and set up someone to come out. And I do have a couple handouts if people are interested. I do have a couple handouts here on active shooter. Again, stuff that you can get from the website as well. And then, you guys can see that. This is my favorite picture in the entire world. Right? You got a frog getting eaten by a bird, and the frog's choking the hell out of the bird. Right? He's not going down without a plate. So be the frog. Don't quit. Even if it looks hopeless, don't quit. You're going to be fine. All right, that's all I got.
Too far, I'm gonna cover the coolest cybercrime case ever.